You're listening to Flight Test Podcast Episode 8. Hi, and welcome to the Flight Test Podcast. If you're into scratch building, FPV flying, radio control planes, helis, multi-rotors, this podcast is for you.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 8 of the Flight Test Podcast. I have with me kind of the usual crew. I'm Austin Fury.
I'm David.
I'm Chad.
And I'm Josh.
And today
Josh?
Which Josh? Yeah. I'm confused.
The tall, bald one.
Oh.
Josh Pixler. How's that? Is that better?
Where's Josh Scott?
Huh? He's working.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
We do need to get Josh Scott in here for another podcast.
We do. It was great having him.
He did episode 2?
Yeah, I think it was episode 2, right?
He's due. He's due for a podcast. Today, we have a couple interesting topics. First of all, I want to thank everybody that went to speakpipe.com/flighttest and left us a voicemail. We have almost an hour of voicemails flight test.
That's going to make for a long
episode.
Let's
just start with it now then.
Yeah, well, that's actually awesome. I'm glad you brought that up because we are sort of because our first segment today is going to be FPV Q&A, where we're just going to talk about all of the common questions we get about FPV. And also, one thing I noticed, a lot of our most recent voicemails were very FPV heavy. So we had a lot of FPV questions. So we're actually going to do a segment called FPV Q&A, where we actually play voicemails that we got that are questions about FPV, which is kind of cool.
That probably brings up a good point, too. If a voicemail wasn't heard at one time, we may use it later.
Exactly. And also, just wanted to give a quick tip for all the people leaving voicemails. We are much more likely to play something on the show if you can give your name, where you're from, and kind of get to the point within 30, 45 seconds.
Make it concise.
Yeah, make it concise. And
don't overexplain it, Austin.
It doesn't necessarily have to be a question. It can be a statement as well or a discussion topic. Yeah. So feel free to leave
those,
too.
You love knowing your name, though. It's really great to know
name,
your name.
Name, where you're from, because that's fun to do. So anyway, FPV Q&A, that's what we're starting right now. And go.
FPV David, what's your question?
I am 14, and I'm gonna... Okay, so, yeah, FPV main segment, are we rolling?
Yeah, we can roll a first question. Yeah. Well, first, I just want to talk about, is there any questions that jump out at you guys as just something you get asked constantly about?
What goggles should I get?
How far can you fly?
What's the cheapest way I can get into it?
Yeah.
It's so funny, we all knew them right away.
Where can I buy everything? That's another question.
Ah, that's true.
Because people don't want to mess around with buying the wrong things or running around it. You know.
Well, and it seems like the more and more FPVs get more common, everything's getting more adaptable and compatible with each other, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want to get something and don't want to solder, the ReadyMade RC package they have for $350 is pretty good.
At first, I was like really upset. I was like, that's just a crazy amount of money. But when you actually itemize it and look at what each item costs, it's a good value, and the fact that it can grow with you is pretty cool.
Well, real quick.
That sound like a commercial.
Yeah. Well, real quick to break that down for people that aren't aware, we're actually going to be releasing an episode. Is it next week maybe?
Let's see. This is Monday?
December 31st, I think it's coming out, something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah,
30th
I think
maybe.
So.
Whatever. It's coming out end of December.
Yep.
ReadyMade RC put together a solder-free, am I saying that right? FPV kit that fits...
Kind of a plug-and-play, right?
Yeah. Fits flight test swappables and multi-rotors, or at least the ones that were designed for FPV. And they designed it so you can buy everything in one package and then just put it to use.
And I use that kit on the face-off episode we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no problems whatsoever. I didn't get a single lockout.
The monitor I was most impressed with. The monitor is a really nice monitor.
It was. Because you can see it in broad daylight.
Yeah, we were out and it was bright, sunny day.
Yeah. They give you a little sun shield on it. It was kind of cute. And you know, the monitors...
Cute.
Well, the sun shield, it was cute. The neat thing with the monitors, too, is a lot of times you're flying FPV and someone comes up and it's like, what's it like? Well, say you're out of sight or you don't want to pull off your goggles and try to find the plane. It's a lot easier just to tap off of that. And the receiver had two outs, didn't it? So you could put your goggles in one and you could have this. You didn't have to have a splitter and amplifier. I know it's bad to wire your signal, so that's really exceptional.
Yeah, you really can't wire a video signal without a powered
amplifier. But it's not good.
Yeah. Well, it'll be really bad, yeah.
And it, not that we're starting with a commercial, but real quick, can we just talk about what comes in the package?
Display, video receiver on 2.4, the Immersion RC Uno receiver.
Video receiver on
2.4? 5.8.
5.8,
I mean,
okay.
Good.
Correct.
Then the 600 milliwatt 5.8 Immersion RC transmitter, a camera. I can't remember the resolution of that, but it was nice. It was pretty nice.
Good enough.
Yeah.
Good enough. And a lot of cables for that. So, I mean, and a tripod and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's mostly – that's actually the same setup that we run on most of our stuff for the show too.
Yeah, the same specs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you basically just named what you need to get into FPV. So it's not so much a commercial, but it just – if you want to get into FPV, this is what you need to buy.
Well, the problem is 5.8 will not work everywhere.
Right, but it's that is the perfect way to get started. 5.8, it's a legal frequency, and it's good enough to get started because you don't need to be flying a mile away right out of the gate.
No, most of the fun is just above the ground and close to you.
In line of sight.
In line of sight,
yeah. Well, also, like Josh mentioned, we come at a lot of business-type opportunities backwards. We look at what are the questions we get, what really helps people, what gives people a lot of value. And then we approach, you know, companies like Ready-Made RC and say, hey, can you make something for our audience, put something together that just works?
Right.
And so I think that's a pretty cool way to go about it.
Well, and the hinging points on the cost are two things. It's the usually how you receive the image or view the image, I should say, and how you capture the image. Because the GoPro is going to be the most expensive thing, but it gives you the nicest recording. The monitor is going to be cheaper than the goggles, but the goggles are great because you know, it's right there on your head, and you're not, you know, I've had a number of times, like maybe I'm showing off an FPV system or something, and sure enough, somebody sticks their head between you and the monitor because they want to see what's going on, and they don't realize like they're block. It's like jumping in on the dashboard of a car. Like you can't see what's going on.
And the other perspective too is when someone stands right in front of your antenna.
Yes, that's the other
what's going on.
Yeah, they come up and they stand right in front and their torso's covering your antenna.
What's better than goggles or a screen?
Goggles.
Yeah, goggles are amazing. And the thing is, though, you want to get good quality goggles that are going to meet your needs. So if you're going to save up for something, I'd say start off with a screen because you're always going to benefit from having a screen, and then get the goggles afterwards.
Yeah, and goggles versus screen, it depends on better. Like the goggles are definitely a better experience.
Yeah.
The screen is more versatile.
Yeah. I know some people say starting out, you can watch the plane and watch the monitor and fly for 2 seconds and then watch it again.
That was detrimental for me, actually.
Yeah, that actually sounds safer, and I even started out doing that. But what happens is you look away, you look back, you lost it. Then you go back to the monitor and it's you don't know where you're at. Yeah, and it's bad.
You start panicking.
I don't like it either. I think the goggles are the best idea because you really need to be able to. That's Max scratching at the door.
Yeah, should we let
him? Can you hear him?
We should shoot.
Yeah. Collar removed.
So let's wait until Max.
All right. Come here, fluffy boy.
So he's got his collar, his jingly collar.
Yeah, I'll remove his jingly collar. He gets really upset with that.
So what were you saying, David?
That when you start out, you need to learn to be able to navigate from the air. It's really important.
Yeah.
Like you have to be able to know where you are at all times without any help, because if something fails, you should always be able to find your way back.
Right. I think that's definitely, I mean, safety first, and also protect your investment.
Yeah. A GPS tracker, I think you lost one, a plane.
Well, yeah, but I didn't have my GPS tracker on. Is that the point you're making?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that experience?
Sure, I'd love to. Bixler and I spent hours one day.
It was
a
good bonding time.
Yeah.
You know, and also, you know, getting chased through fields.
Yeah, that was really, oh boy, that was a day where there was really low fog, and above the fog, there was a beautiful sunset. And it was weird because normally you don't get fog in the evening like that. Mm-hmm. So it was a very unique situation. And I went – what I – the reason I even went out was it was my Maxi Swift and I got it – I wanted to try a different prop combination with the motor. So I thought, oh, I'm just going to throw it up in the air. And I figured, well, since I'm up, I might as well fly it FPV a little bit and just see how it feels. Then I'm up and I'm like, wow, the cloud layer or the you know, the fog is so low. I'll just pop up above there. And I looked and the sunset is amazing. I was completely lost in the moment.
Wasn't there a beautiful layer of clouds like above it?
Yeah,
too?
So it's like it's sandwiched. You got like clouds – well, it looked like clouds below you, the sunset and a cloud layer above. And it was just absolutely beautiful. And I'd share it with you guys if – I had the footage, but I didn't. I normally had an Eagle Tree and a GPS tracker, so the Eagle Tree would tell me my coordinates, and the GPS tracker, if it went down, I could just locate it. And I didn't have either on it because I or powered up because I was just testing the prop. I thought I was going to spin around in a couple ovals and be done. And when I came down out of the fog layer, I didn't recognize anything, and I was flying west towards the sunset, and I'm like, oh, that town over there west of us, that's Brewster, so that must be the town I'm seeing. So I turned around, and the signal got worse, and it didn't make sense. It's like, wait, I'm coming closer to home, and the signal keeps getting worse. So I turned back around and where I think I'm flying away, and what happened was I was up in a slipstream, and it was so calm and steady. I mean,
the wind. Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't a turbulent wind. It was just a big, massive, river of air moving. I was actually flying backwards the whole time. I was I thought I was heading west. Since I didn't have my GPS or anything on it, I couldn't tell by my instruments. So anyhow, that was a very expensive mistake. I lost a GoPro. I lost the Maxi Swift. All the
We met a lot of nice people.
Yes, we knocked on a lot of doors. That's funny. I did eventually – I hit record just as it was going down on my ground station because I happen to have a DVD recorder on my ground station. So I did see it start to go down, but where it went down was – it was still probably 200 feet up when it went down.
Yeah.
And I lost signal because it was over the tree line. And
you can travel a lot of distance.
Yeah. So the lesson learned is GPS tracker, have a GPS tracker.
Or something, yeah. Even an audible locator, like something that beeps when the battery gets low, then you'll hear it because you'll hear those things for hundreds of feet.
It's funny where you have trouble. Yeah, you lost a plane flying in your backyard. We send planes up into space, and those planes we always found.
Well, we always had GPS trackers on them, and we had an audible tracker on the one.
Yeah, that audible tracker was great.
So in that case, yeah, David and I were working on his mission to space, and it was 80 miles away where it came down. We used the GPS tracker to get within, a couple of acres of closeness to it, and then we heard the audible alarm.
And we got there. I kid you not, 2 minutes after we got there, as soon as we saw it, it stopped beeping.
The battery completely died and it stopped beeping, so we found it just in time.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I guess that's the value also. If you're going to have an investment flying like that and you have a checklist, you have your – because you had the GPS tracker, you had all that stuff. Take the time, even if it's a moment, I'm going to take it up. Take the time to go through and get all that stuff activated because you never know. If you get lost in the moment and you're experiencing something, you want all those benefits working for you.
And write your name and phone number on it.
Yeah, it's different when you have a multicopter though because you usually don't get pushed as much by the wind and it's different.
Right. The multicopters are more – you're staying closer proximity usually.
Yeah. Depends on what you're doing. You don't get pushed in the same way you always feel it.
Right.
Multi-rotors just – there's more motors per same amount of batteries that you can lift. So it's just
technically
they don't last as long.
Well, it depends because you're splitting the power between the four too. So if
That's true,
can create a really efficient multi-rotor that you get quite a bit of flight time. There's no glide slope.
Right.
You're right.
Right.
But if you're actively flying or aggressively flying.
So what's the best tip you can give to a pilot that wants to start in the FPV hobby?
Oh, boy. Do a lot of research. The bottom line is the more – I mean there's going to be more and more plug-and-play, ready-to-fly stuff available. And I'm sure it's getting closer and closer where you can just spend some money and get something that's nice. But if you build it yourself, if you put pieces together and understand how everything works, you're going to be able to put the effort, time, money, and energy – into something that is right for you. It's like building your own house. You know, you're going to lay it out and do it exactly the way that you want it. And in the end, you'll probably end up spending less money but more time. But in my opinion, the time is worth it.
Well, the knowledge is worth it too.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Because how it works and not be a slave to, oh, I got to buy this complete package. And
right.
How will this work? Will this not work? Well, by the time you get through that and you have a successful experience, you're going to have that knowledge. You're going to know exactly what you need and how you need to apply it.
Definitely.
I think that part of the benefit or big benefit of something like the ready-made RC package is that it, I think, is also what we talked about when we were giving like specs and that sort of thing. But it takes the mystery away. Even though you're not soldering anything yourself or it takes the – you see how everything goes together. You see how to put it together.
Max,
sorry, we're super distracted.
He came in and picked up his collar.
Just to jingle it.
Yeah. He actually picked up his collar in his mouth and walked out. That has he ever done that?
He's like, that's mine.
He is honestly obsessive – he's an obsessive compulsive dog. I guess squirrel moment. But,
yeah, we're talking about dogs now.
Yeah. My dog has 3 rubber chicken ducks. And it looks like a rubber chicken, but it's actually a duck. It has a beak. And he has 3 of them. And we try to get rid of the nastiest, oldest one, and he will find it, and he will bring it in. And we've given up on this, but he'll take his duck out when he goes to do his business. If he forgets it, he'll go nuts until we let him out, and he'll bring his duck back in. He'll line them up perfectly in a row. And sometimes he'll snuggle with them.
Wow. Please take a picture of that so we could post it with the notes.
Okay, I have a picture of it, yes. It will be on your show notes.
That's funny.
Yeah. So wait, what were we talking about?
Best tip to getting into FPV.
Oh,
so do
okay.
Your research.
Yeah, do your research is huge.
And also, we were talking about their ready-made RC package.
Oh, yeah. Well, all I was saying is that buying a comprehensive package, I think it's nice to be able to just see everything work. And that takes the mystery away.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you're thinking about, well, maybe I should upgrade to goggles, mm-hmm. or maybe I should upgrade the camera. I think a lot of things in that package really are pretty nice. I don't think they're really want to upgrade too much.
You're talking about goggles. I don't want to overshadow Fat Shark because we all 3 of us use Fat Sharks and we love them.
That was my next point. I was just waiting for it to go quiet.
There you go.
Get the Fat Shark Attitude SD with that comes with a 250 milliwatt transmitter. Perfect start out.
Yes, that
absolutely
is
fantastic.
If you can find them.
Total. Yeah, they sell out like crazy.
They like tickle me almost.
Yes. Only quieter.
Only quieter.
Did you just tickle Austin?
No, I did not. Not after the last meeting.
Tickled my funny bone. Yeah,
if you get that, get the Immersion RC circular polarized antennas.
Yes.
With
and
every
then
penny.
Yes. And then after a while, you can upgrade to a 600 milliwatt transmitter, and you have a really good system.
Do you even know what the price point is on that? Like if you did that, what you just said, because I agree with you 100%.
It's all getting close to $400 almost.
Still around $400 with the goggles.
Yeah.
But it is worth it. You will grow with it. It's expandable.
Well, and you don't have to have a ground station that you're tethered to, too.
Yes.
That's the nice thing. It's built into your goggles. Yeah. That's one of the reasons I love it so much, because I grab my tricopter in one hand and my goggles and my transmitter in the other and have everything I need.
Well, when it gets cold, I actually put the goggles on my forehead because it will warm them so
yes.
they don't fog up by the time you're flying. So I usually put the goggles on my forehead, transmitter, and I keep the hexacopter in my back seat, the Anycopter hexacopter with the gimbal, which we're going to be doing some videos on that. I keep it literally in my back seat, and if I see a nice sunset or a great location or whatever, I just jump out and fly.
And, I saw a roll of all your different footage you've captured at different times. It's amazing.
Well,
it's awesome.
I hope people like it.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Okay, should we play a voicemail at this point, maybe?
Before we play a voicemail, should we play – the first thing I haven't queued up is that voiceover guy. Should we play that just for fun?
Yep.
Should we give a little backstory?
Yeah, let's hear about
so
who he is.
I forgot to write down his name, but a very nice gentleman sent us a file of like preloaded flight test clips because he has a great – radio voice or dramatic voice or whatever you want to say. So anyway, this is one of, 6 clips that he sent us. So I just wanted to play it real quick.
Welcome to the Flight Test Podcast featuring Austin Fury, Chad Capper, David Vindestol, and Josh Bixler.
I just thought it was great that somebody would take the time to make all those. And sorry I forgot to write down your name, but I just wanted to thank you for sending those in. We had a good laugh.
I'm sure you can put the name in the show notes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. I really appreciate the awesome intro. And it kind of sheds light that we are definitely not ones to – we are who we are.
Right. Yeah. The comment was that, you know, because Austin and I are doing the openings and we're not professional voiceover people. But I think even though we try to apply a high standard to how things are presented, it's at some point it almost becomes overproduced, you know, and that's why even on the second camera, you see the other camera and you see the boom pole and stuff. It's like, well, we want it to look good, but we don't want it to be so stringent and overproduced that it starts to make it feel, I don't know.
High quality but simple?
Yeah. Yeah. Like
trying too hard.
Yeah. We don't ever want it to impede the content. Like if it's like, oh, crap, we're going to release it late because we don't have all the professional things lined up or whatever. Like we don't want that to happen. We want to make sure, you know, we get things done in a fun way.
Yeah. But thank you, friend, for and actually thank you, everybody, for all the contributions. We get lots of people mailing stuff in, leaving us great emails on their stories and also sharing their wisdom to help us make a better show. And it means a lot to us.
Oh, yeah.
So please keep it coming.
Yeah, we love it when other people are part of the show. So first voicemail. These are all FPV related. So we'll play the first one here.
Hey, guys. I'm interested in building a camera platform for aerial video using a gimbal, and I'm interested to know what the benefits and pros and cons are between a Y-copter setup and a quadcopter. Thanks for your help.
Well, David, I think this is going to be all you because you've got a lot of experience with a Y-copter.
Yeah, also known as a tricopter, or depending on
Is he talking about Y6?
It could be a Y6.
Okay, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, so if you're going for a gimbal setup, it doesn't really matter what platform you're using almost, in my opinion, because the platform is no longer you're not flying the platform anymore because you can't fly from the gimbal and fly the platform. You have to have a controller that flies for you and you tell the controller what to do, like a DJI NASA on the Hex, for instance. Chad, you fly through the gimbal, but when you jam on the sticks, mm-hmm. whenever you release it, it's going to stop.
Right.
And that's
which a big... actually don't – I don't recommend. I do it because I'm willing to wreck it.
Yeah.
But
still, you get used to it.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't want to recommend it and then somebody's really upset that their expensive rig went plowed into the ground.
It's a really good way to erase your whole machine, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I've done it 3 times.
But yeah, if you're if you're planning on using a brushless gimbal flying through it, doesn't really matter what platform you're using. You can get the same performance out of almost any platform. It's just at that point, it's mostly what you prefer and what fits your needs. Like, does it fit in a car? Do you want it foldable? Do you want it small or do you want it big?
Also, what do you need to lift?
Exactly. So it all depends. I'm sorry it does. Yeah, it's just more or less up to you. If you're running a coaxial setup, you will never get the same performance or efficiency, I would say, as a normal copter. But on the other hand, you have only 3 airstreams, which is super nice when you decel, which because you have just 3 columns of air and there's not a lot to there's not a huge cushion of air then.
And, you know, I was peppering you with questions earlier about tricopters, and you really articulated it well. You talked about how since the tricopter has that beautiful swoopy nature, you really want to take hold of that and own that. You know, that's one of the great benefits. So to lift a gimbal where everything's stabilized on a tricopter,
It's not the best of – I mean, it's fine. If you want to do it, it's completely fine. You have an excellent yaw authority and smoothness of yaw when you do that. But the problem is you don't have any there's not a lot of controllers that can do a tricopter setup.
Yeah, only the APM from what I know.
The APM can fly a tricopter good, and then there's a few others, but they're – there are not too many, especially if you want to fly from the gimbal.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I hope that answered your question. Sorry.
I think that was a pretty thorough response. All right, next question is from Jared in Texas.
Hi, this is Jared Hsu of Fort Worth, Texas. My question is, What would be each of y'all's dream location to fly multi-rotor POV if distance, money, time, etc. were not a hindrance? Appreciate it, guys, and God bless.
So what was the question?
Your abs, if you got to choose one location to fly FPV.
Oh, I know. I think David and I might have the same location.
Go ahead.
Iceland.
Well,
because we had talked about it before.
I know.
And I think...
I have another one, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what? No, start. Why Iceland?
Well, it's just so exotic and... I don't know. I like – I guess everybody thinks of tropical locations and, you know, other than – well, in Trapi in Austria. But I just think that it's so unique looking and I don't know. I like the cold, wintry, kind of desolate locations.
The cool thing about – it's like New Zealand as well. There's like all kinds of climates or all kinds of different landscapes.
And colors.
And color. And it's like you have the beautiful I don't know the English word for that, but you have waterfalls and it's gorgeous.
Diversity and geography.
Yeah, maybe. And there's so many things there. There's geysers, and it's absolutely gorgeous.
Right.
But my first pick, because it's easier, the question was without any money hindrance, it would probably be Iceland then, but but thinking about money and stuff, I would go to Norway, and I would go to there's some
fjords.
Yeah, there's.
Am I saying that right?
A fjord.
Fjord.
That's the English word for it. But anyway,
so what's the Swedish word?
Fjord. I start saying stuff without thinking about it.
That's the flight test way.
There's these cliffs that are almost 1,000 meters high, and they use those for base jumping. And it's vertical, straight down vertical, and it's just straight down to a huge fjord. It's just water. It's absolutely gorgeous there. So I'm going to go there, hike up, fly the tricopter, fly really close to the ground, and just dive over the edge. So you don't see. You fly like an inch over the ground, and you're like, oh, this is cool. And then just dive and just go surfing through next to the rocks.
Well, and I have to revise mine because I have to really think if money wasn't an object, is that kind of the thing?
Yeah.
I would fly in the moon, but of course you would have to create the atmosphere. So it would be quite expensive, but that would be my choice if money was not an object.
Wait here. We can do – what you could do is
on
have –
on the next episode.
You can have compressed air. You can make a copter with compressed air shooting down.
That's true.
That's hilarious.
There's only one way to test it, too. You got to get to the moon.
So yes.
It'll justify the budget. Yep.
Hey, okay. Literally. So that's our – should we schedule that for, like, March?
Hey, they did a quad when they landed on Mars.
Mars.
Yeah. I almost said March. and they had the Curiosity rover.
Yeah.
When they landed that, they had a quad with
I didn't know
thrusters.
That.
Aww. So they had a thruster quad landing that platform.
Why don't we just build that anyhow?
It's already been done.
Okay, that's how episodes are born, my friends.
Yes. Well, so, Josh, your favorite one?
Honestly, number one, I'm afraid of heights, so I can't really do cliffs, but I would love to see what you do with it. I have a fascination with animals that can kill me. And you're watching your Everglades episode and that wildlife preserve with the lion.
Yeah.
I think if money was an object, I would love to either do Australia or Africa.
Ooh.
Where it's long and flat. I don't have to fall off any cliffs. But at the same time
– I mean, you can just run forever when they chase you? That's
exactly,
great.
Exactly. At the same time, I would be able to get close to these animals.
To ferocious kangaroos.
Ferocious kangaroos or lions and tigers. And,
nice.
But yeah, just to get out there, observe wildlife, and then come down, you know, like see them from an altitude, come down, intermingle, and then come back out and observe it from an altitude. To me, it's just
– I was watching that Everglades video again. It was quite a while ago since I made it. So I watched it, and I'm like – with that tiger walking up to the tricopter, it's an awesome shot. But I'm sitting on a stub, like, what is it, like 20 feet from that tiger.
You could have seen yourself get mauled.
Exactly. I was thinking, I was like, that
third
would
person.
Be weird.
Yeah, it would be.
Like, see yourself being attacked from a third and perspective.
What do you do at that point? Do you just
I was
get
just
the shot?
It. Yeah, I was
just
film
it. Like, this hurts so bad, but it's kind of cool.
I'm going to get like 100,000 hits on YouTube.
I think I'm feeling myself fading away now.
Oh.
Well, yeah. I have to at least give an FPV suggestion. I'm glad that money's not an option because I would just wreck every single setup that I would fly. But I think FPV is really cool. But I went on a trip, like a 16-day trip to New Zealand. And Queenstown, New Zealand would be an epic place to do any kind of FPV. And also Milford Sound in New Zealand would be an awesome place to do FPV. Mm. And I'm sure people have done it just because why wouldn't you? I know there's a lot of RC people in New Zealand. So, yeah, if there is anybody that has footage or whatever, that's an amazing place.
I want to fly in an active volcano. Fly over lava and stuff, like pouring out. Or just go straight into a crater.
Your props melt.
Yeah, there's one thing I'm dying at. Chad, I think I've bent your ear numerous times, but I would love to fiberglass a wing and then partner with the Storm Chaser guys and fly something.
Oh, yeah. Josh has been talking about that forever.
So Storm Chasers, call us. Yeah. I want to fly something toward tornado real bad.
I agree.
Next one.
Next question is from Reed in California.
Hey, guys. This is Reed from California. And I was wondering, for FPV, couldn't you use the new thing, the Oculus Rift, for gaming? You could use just head control to fly your planes. I don't know, just an idea.
That is a very, very common question.
Yes, you can, and it would be stupid.
Don't hold anything back there, David.
Yeah. Tell us what you really think.
What he means is we get that question a lot, and you know, there's two ways to answer that. One is for the experience of our audience. The benefit of the Oculus Rift is the experience of actually experiencing it.
Yeah.
It does not translate to an audience through a YouTube video.
Yeah, it doesn't show on a video. But like the format of those displays, the Oculus Rift only have one display in the, instead of two, like the Fat Sharks. It only has one big display and you have the Opplers. And they, with software, split the screen in two, so you have 3D vision. And then you have head tracking inside of it. We already have head tracking in our... We had that for a long, long time to control the gimbal and the plane. But the Oculus Rift, the image is so high and so narrow that it doesn't make any sense. And the resolution isn't much higher than the Fat Sharks.
But he had a really good point. He's like, control your plane with your head movement. It sounds great. It sounds like a lot of fun, but I don't think it would be.
Well, and one thing is when we put on the goggles, we end up in the fetal position eventually.
Yes. Your head does not move in any way, shape, or form in a beneficial way to flying.
I think if anything, it'd be kind of fun to do a challenge to see how hard it would be to do that.
Yeah, that would be nice.
But I don't think it would translate to a good experience, although it sounds like a pretty crazy idea. I mean, all the technology working at once.
Yeah, if you try the Fat Shark goggles, you would not see any benefit in doing the Oculus Rift. I'm sorry.
Well, we all have head tracking. I don't use my head tracking.
I used it. What was it? 3 years last I used it.
Yeah.
And it's not that great.
Well, like Chad said, I think what may increase my love for head tracking after doing the Kraken with the brushless gimbal. You mentioned putting the head tracking on the brushless gimbal. Do you remember that, Chad?
Yes.
And I think that's brilliant because then you can look and it would be so smooth, but you're flying a plane, not a multirotor.
Yeah, and I love the idea of trying it, you know, see how the head tracker is. But the Fat Sharks have head tracking. So you can – and it's meant for FPV and
– You don't have to do anything. I personally don't see the point.
And anyway. I want to apologize for David. He didn't mean it was stupid. It was Swedish for that's a – A different idea than he
question.
Would approve of.
It's a cultural difference.
Yeah, I didn't mean anything personal. Sorry, I just get that question a lot.
All right.
No presents for you from Santa.
It's okay. I have all the stuff I need.
Next question.
I recently purchased a GoPro Hero Black Edition, and I'm having a little trouble getting nice, clear video like I see on a lot of you guys' recordings. I was wondering what the optimal settings are to get nice, crisp, clear video after you import it onto the computer and edit it. Thanks.
Do you have your receipt?
Yeah, what was his name?
Fabian.
Fabian, I think David and I know the exact answer to your question.
Yeah, but the question changed midway. It was when you get it into the software.
Well, yeah, but I think what he's probably referring to is the focus. Because the newer GoPros do not come focused for distance.
No, it does not.
It's like 5
GoPro
feet.
3 Hero Black Plus Edition is super bad for long distances. It's so soft.
Yeah, you actually have to take it apart. And I didn't. Nobody here has done it other than David, because I was too afraid to take my $400 camera apart and refocus it.
The key is not to think about how expensive it is.
How expensive of a mistake this could be.
Because it's not simply cracking it open and twisting the lens. Like, you have to go through a bunch of steps in order to refocus it. So yeah. That's bittersweet, because once you do refocus it, it is awesome.
The GoPro 3 Black, the normal one, was absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. But what record mode do you use to get the best video? What do you use?
I just use the 1080 medium view. Okay. I do the medium view because the wide view is just, in my opinion, too wide, and you just feel like you're too far from everything. And it's easier to remove the distortion. So in the GoPro software, it does have a one-click option that allows you to remove that lens distortion.
It's awesome. It really is.
Yeah.
And what I do is I do 1080, 60 frames a second.
Yeah, I do 60 as well. Yes.
Because the more, the higher the frame rate, it's actually easier to not get the jello effect. And also you can slow it down afterwards, making it look nicer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the slow-mo on that is awesome.
It's great. So really, that's really it. We don't do I don't do much about the image at all. Afterwards, I just sometimes I remove the barrel distortion, and that's it.
Okay, nice. Next FPV question.
Hey guys at Flight Test, Sam from England here. My question is, when doing your first FPV flight, what maneuvers would you do in terms of, you know, rolling and things like that, and, you know, landing, or would you just keep it simple flight? Thanks, and love your show. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Man, I like his question.
Yes.
Can I take a stab at it?
Yeah, please.
Awesome. A lot of people, when we fly out at my parents' place, a lot of people want to try FPV. The very first thing I set them to do is, first I have them look through, I have a monitor hook up, and I take them through a standard pattern. But rather than talking about, okay, yeah, just fly a simple oval, I actually have them pinpoint objects. Like, do you see my house over there? Okay, now that's cool. Now let's take a 90 degree to the left. Do you see that tower right there? That's cool. Now let's take a 90 degree left. Now look, you're flying over that road. I think the most important thing is to define your playground once you get in the air. Mm. Once you do that, you know, and pick out those landmarks, the nice thing is if you get on the wrong side of that landmark, you know, wait a minute, that landmark's on my right. It should have been on my left. I'm going away from us. So the first thing to do is obviously learn your area. Once you learn that area, then you look beyond it.
That's great.
I can tell he's never flown FPV, because the first time you fly FPV, you're freaked out. 100%. You're like, what? You can't think about doing any stunts or anything. Yeah. So it comes very natural. The first thing you want to do is like define your playground, as if the best tip ever. Before you even fly, go on a map, Google Maps, and set a boundary that you know is less than your distance by far.
Don't set it, okay, half a mile out instead of a mile out. Set it like
500 feet.
Yeah, 1,000 feet each way, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you go over that point, you have to turn around and count that as a crash, so to speak. Mm. That's the best thing. If you can keep inside of that box and never do anything wrong, then you can move on.
Yeah, and, you know, he was – I'm sorry, what was his name? I want to say each person's name.
His name was someone. He didn't give his name.
Oh, someone. Oh,
someone from England.
Oh, someone from England.
Yeah.
So I guess in – you know, he had mentioned something like rolls and like don't get into doing any stunts until you're ready to – if you're ready to take your multirotor out onto the concrete and throw it on to the ground, smashing it to bits, then you should try – doing stunts.
Yeah, if you want to do – with planes, it's easier to do rolls and stuff.
Well, yeah.
And I think the first aerobatic maneuver, I think a roll would be the first before even a loop, because then you're keeping your horizon in check and you have a point of reference.
Well, also do it all line of sight first to make sure your airframe can even do it, because how many airframes have we rolled inverted and it does not fly inverted?
And also a really good tip is to get a friend to fly it and you watch through the FPV goggles. He flies it line of sight and then he does a roll or a loop, and you can experience without doing anything. You
what
can just watch it.
Like. Yeah.
And know what it should look like.
Yeah. And how it feels. How hard can you push it?
And
yeah,
also, that's good. The platform you choose, you don't want to choose a fast. Just because you can fly a fast plane, say like a Striker, doesn't mean that should be your first FPV plane.
Yeah. I get questions on my site quite often. Oh, I have this 200 miles an hour hotliner I want to put FPV on. I'm like, yeah, that's not the best idea to start out with.
You just cover more ground and you have more chances to get in trouble. So something really simple, slow, that you can fly easy line of sight, it'll be more difficult for the first time, but more difficult in the terms of nerves and just where am I, you know, keeping the logistics. You don't want to have to concentrate on flying the plane.
Yeah,
awesome. Okay,
good question, guys. Brother.
Yeah, next question.
Next is Leo from Sweden.
Woo!
Hi, Flight Test. My name is Leo, and I'm from Sweden, and I want to start by just saying thank you for making such a great show and providing so much to the RC community. I have two questions, which is aimed at Chad and at David. The first one is, David, I noticed one of the first FPV goggles in your videos is the Fat Shark RCV922, and they're orange. How did you paint them, and what color do you recommend using? The second one is to Chad. Is Flight Test planning on coming out with any gimbals like brushless or servo driven? Thank you for a great show, guys. Bye.
Thank you, Leo. I can tell you're from Sweden.
I could too, because he said he was from Sweden.
Oh, really?
That's didn't cheating.
Sorry. No. My goggles, I painted them with the color I found in Chad's basement.
It was the brightest orange he could find.
Yes. I have no idea. I think it was Krylon. I'm not sure. I painted them maybe 20 or 40 layers.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend whatever he used.
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah, it's holding up really good,
but
though.
You redid it like 8 times.
Yeah. 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 So what you need to do when you paint those, they're a little bit fatty, that plastic.
Oily, in other words.
Oily,
right?
Yes. So what you want to do is just sand it and get as much surface tension as you can and wipe it down with alcohol.
He's calling. Everybody turn off your phones.
I can't find mine.
Use something else than I did. Get a nice quality. Well, you're the paint master, so.
Well, yeah, and what you're talking about, fatty, is very true. Fatty and oily. There is a trick, and it's not for the faint of heart, but automotive, you can use plastic preps and things like that. That'll take a lot of it. There's also a technique called flaming. Nice. And what you do is you take a propane torch and you do all that you talked about. You sand and scuff the whole surface, wipe it down with alcohol, or if you have an automotive prep or some kind of surface prep made for paint, that's great. But what flaming is that residual that's still there. You don't want to be touching it. And even if you touch it with your fingers, you're going to leave that oil. Taking a propane, and I'm not talking about holding on there. I'm talking about literally letting the flame lick over the plastic really quick. I'm saying if you have a foot space, you're going over that whole foot space within one and a half seconds.
Wow.
So it's a general straight movement. Not with the hottest part of the flame, but the actual yellow part.
So it's just drying up any of the oils?
Well, what it's doing is actually igniting and burning it off.
Ah.
And it's pretty cool because you'll know if you have a fatty substance, because the second that flame licks over top of it, you'll actually see – yeah, you'll see almost like it combust for a second and then flame off. It'll leave like this little ring of a vapor as you move the flame over it, and cool. And you're burning off. The way we discovered that was through chroming. I used to chrome with a water-based or hydro application, I guess you can say. I forget what the technical term is. But that's how we did it because we couldn't scan it. You can't have scuff marks in chrome or it'll show.
Yep.
I'm okay with charcoal gray.
Charcoal gray. Yeah. Well, we just turned into a painting thing. But yes. But yeah, flaming's good for anything that's fatty. It really does an amazing job, and I've used it on a lot of different plastics.
Okay, Chad, your question?
It was part two of Leo's question was, are we coming out with a gimbal? Absolutely. It's so funny you asked. We just did an article for Make Zine, which is Maker Sheds magazine, and it will feature the gimbal design in there, and we will also make it available for people as plans. I guess we'll look to see if we'll manufacture anything.
So simple, yeah.
Yeah, it's really simple. And the whole idea, and if you guys notice, everything we design, the idea is to make it as simple as possible so everybody can do it.
Reproducible.
Yeah, so if we do manufacture it, it's just because people want it. You know, they want us to.
It's for the convenience.
Right. It's really a convenience factor, not that you can't make it yourself. The idea is that everything we do, you can make yourself. as much as possible.
But it's, you know, it's funny. I've seen some professional gimbals. I looked at Chad's and was like, yeah, I like that one better. It's truly simple. And the nice thing is you can tweak it to your exact system that you have.
It's really just three L-bend aluminum what do you call them? Aluminum bar stock. Mm-hmm. And but it took about four builds to get all the measurements right and do it and match it up with some good gimbal motors and everything.
Is that the article we collaborated with 3DR on?
Yes.
Do you know where listeners would be able to find that or be able to look for that? Or?
Not yet. Okay, I just know it's MakeZine is the magazine.
Okay.
And I'm not sure where or how it'll be featured. I just know that we put a lot of work into the article.
Sure.
And it's coming up, so look for it.
Well, if it ends up that we can find that or something, we'll try to link to it in the show notes. By the way, I am taking notes for you guys. So if you want to look those up on flighttest.com, just click on the podcast icon in the upper right-hand corner.
Okay, next.
Next question is from Pavlos in Greece.
Hello, guys, at Flightest. My name is Pavlos from Greece, and my question is on 2.4 radio. I'm interested to know, for my quad, how is the receiver antenna should be mounted in terms of orientation, as well as the transmitter antenna. Should it point up, down, and what is best for a quad, like the Discovery? Anyway, thank you very much, and greetings from Greece. Bye.
So his question was...
It was Pavlos.
Pavlos' question is, where should I mount my receiver antenna, how should I mount it, and my transmitter antenna, how should I have that? Anyone want to take a stab at it? Because I know the answer.
Well, I can tell you what I do. I just zip tie it on.
Yeah. I know.
David's over here cringing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even zip tie mine on. I Velcro it.
Yeah, it pretty much just dangles.
Just dangles. No, with mine, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, at least I'll tack it. He's talking about quad, but I do a lot more flying with planes FPV. I generally like my signal to have the best chance to be the strongest when I'm coming back towards me. So I orientate it in a way that will provide that. One thing I don't do is point the antenna. So if I turn it back towards me, that the antenna is pointing straight towards me because that's where the dead zone is. So far, David's not cringing, so I think I'm on a roll.
Yeah.
And keeping them as far apart as possible is really important.
David's phone keeps making noise.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's okay. My dog keeps making noise too. So
I thought I silenced it. Sorry.
All right, I'm going to let you correct us now.
Yeah, and I urge you guys to listen to David. The reason I just slap stuff together half the time is because a lot of times I'm just designing for function. Whenever I get into flying seriously, I will abide by David's rules.
Yeah, there's some things to think about. Keep your receiver antenna as far away from anything that transmits any noise, any electronics. As far
Which
away
is?
As the ESC, video transmitter, like even KK boards, even the like a camera, anything that's electrical, keep it away from that. Keep it away from anything that can transmit electricity or like...
like your whole quad?
More or less. If it's carbon fiber, then that's not good. Metal is really bad too. Keep it away from all that because it detunes the antenna.
What about aluminum? I know it's a metal.
Yeah, it's not RF transparent either.
It will block RF. Yeah.
It will block and it will detune your antenna. So keep it away, far away from anything that's metal. But what I do is I usually take some plastic or some glass fiber rod and I put it on the quad so it points straight up as far away as from anything as possible, pointing vertically straight up. Because on a quad, you very rarely fly where you're over 90 degrees.
Well, like, you shouldn't.
It happens.
Well, diving, but I mean, not on any length of time.
Well, and you also very rarely fly directly over top of you.
Exactly. And when you do that, you're usually not that high. So it's fine. So because an antenna has two null zones, where it can't receive or transmit. It's the top and the bottom on normal dipoles that we normally have on our stuff. So what you want to do is on your transmitter, you want to have the antenna pointing straight up. And depending on how you want it linearly, they're linearly polarized. So you want them pointing straight up all the time. depending on how you hold your transmitter, some people point their transmitter towards the ground. Then it's better to have the antenna pointing straight down towards the ground. But some people hold them straight up, straight out, and then it's better to have the L bend, the 90-degree upwards bend. So that's the key things. If you can't get it, the antenna should always have a clear path to your transmitter. You shouldn't have them blocked by anything. So if you have a big battery or something, or your frame is carbon fiber, if you have one antenna pointing up, if you look at the quad and you can't see the antenna,
then it's blocked.
And then it's blocked from that signal. So if you have two antennas, what I do is I point one straight up, and then I mount the other one pointing straight down at a point where if I can't see one antenna, I should always be able to see the other antenna and it's not blocked by anything. So that's the absolute best way to get the strongest signal in any possible situation. But like Josh said, always favor the return journey.
Yes.
If you put it on the wrong way and you turn around and you lose the signal,
doesn't do you much good.
No. It's better to start losing the signal if you're going out and turn around and you regain it.
In FPV or not, those tips are perfect for any RC control device.
Anything, yeah. But on planes, you want 90 degrees. You want the two antennas to be oppositely polarized. You have one pointing up and one pointing at the horizon instead. Because when you on a plane, you turn a lot.
Yes.
So you always want
that. I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Okay. Next question.
I'm very passionate.
From Will in California.
Hey, Flight Test. My name is Will, and I'm a student in Northern California. And I just wanted to, first of all, say thanks. I love your guys' show, and I don't know, it's just super awesome. Also, I just wanted to see if you guys, well, I thought it'd be neat for you guys to do some sort of long-range narrated FPV flight. I know a lot of people have done them, but I'm sure you guys would be way better. And then also, I wanted to see someday maybe see David get some success with gliding, because I know he's obviously a really good glider pilot, but in all your episodes, he never really is able to catch a thermal or something like that, so it'd be pretty sweet to see him actually get some good glider flying. So let's see that happen, and thanks for such an awesome show.
Ooh, he called you out.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
That's hilarious.
The problem is, whenever you shoot, it costs money to run the camera, always. You have to have someone run the camera. And when you're out glider flying, when you find a thermal, if you find a really good one, you can actually see it. But the time between getting that super nice thermal and just staying up in the air is a long time.
Yeah, there's some things. And it's not – I mean, it's not that expensive to run the camera, but time is expensive. So, like, I mean, that – to accomplish that would take pretty much all day efforts from multiple people. And then on top of that,
the editing.
It's the return on investment. Yeah, because now even in the post-production, you got to go through all of that. And then beyond that, you're like, well,
it doesn't show up.
What's the benefit?
Yeah, the problem is you very rarely have a good frame of reference when you're flying the glider around and you get a really good thermal. The sky is usually... the clouds are so far back, and you're very rarely that close to the ground because the thermal usually has a funnel shape. So it's easier to catch them higher up, and they're more powerful and more stable. So it's this
black dot up in the sky.
Yeah, it's a little black dot that's going up slightly, and that doesn't really transmit that well into the show.
Well, and to a glider pilot, what gets them excited is the longer they can stay up. Well, to a YouTube viewer,
that's the opposite.
That's the opposite. The longer looking at one thing, the more boring it gets.
I think a good way to maybe try to see if we could meet both his desires is do FPV soaring for long distance, like the cross country long distance.
Oh, yeah. That's brilliant.
I have some really good footage of me FPV thermaling, and I got some really good bubbles, but that's a really good idea.
Well, that way we can go for the distance like he's talking about, but also the perspectives from the aircraft, not the the ground.
Yeah, the problem is with both things, anytime you have something that takes a lot of time, it never translates well into video.
Right. Well, even when we go back to the Oculus Rift, there's certain things that as a pilot you experience and you get excited about, But as soon as you try to share it with somebody, even through a YouTube video, it just doesn't translate. And it's an excellent question. And I mean, you know, I'd like to take it as a challenge because we get those kinds of questions a fair amount. I'd like to take it as a challenge to find a way to make that engaging to our audience and find a way to share that with people. Maybe it'll just take a little more effort and creativity.
And thank you again for your kind words. It's Will, right?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Will.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why we don't do who can stay up the longest or stuff like that, which I personally enjoy so much because I'm a glider pilot and that's all we do. Like when we do the discus launch gliding, it's like last one down loses.
Maybe we could do in an event sometime, maybe next summer or something.
An FPV event coming up. I believe next spring or summer that's going to be organized by ReadyMade.
Yeah, I was looking at that. And I'll link to that in the show notes. But I saw a video or something. Or no, I reposted a video, I think, on Facebook or something about it.
Want to go to the next one?
Yeah. Well, that's actually it for our FPV questions.
Okay.
Nice.
So we're going to...
No one asked about our favorite FPV platform.
Oh. Well, I don't think that was an actual question, but I would love...
Josh, what's your favorite FPV
platform? I would love to hear answers.
You would think I'd say the Bixler, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would.
I'm not going to.
What are you going to say?
No,
dangerous.
I know what you're going to say.
Kit-wise, EPP FPV.
No, the FT Versa.
Well, no, actually, now it's the Kraken, but...
EPP FPV, baby.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like a Mack truck. You could do so much with
that. That was so long ago, too.
I still have it, though.
Yeah.
And a matter of fact, it still has aileron knocked off the David from when he hit me with the Spitfire. But yeah. If it's kit build, EPP FPV, Twin Star truthfully is a really close match to that because of functionality. But then beyond that, scratch build, Kraken or Versa, hands down.
Yeah, it's okay. So, surprise, it's gonna be the Tricopter.
No, wait, what? What?
I know.
How do you say it?
Tricopter. Yes, because you try so much stuff with it.
I wish you guys could see David's face right now.
Yeah,
he's very pleased with himself.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but it really is. I've had it for so long. I'm still using the original frame design. I never have one break frame
the
or
center
anything.
Frame.
Yeah. But yeah, just you can do whatever, and it just feels so nice when you fly around.
It is amazing,
and you can transport it. And Max is currently destroying our fort.
He's fine. Yeah. I left it open so he could go in.
I don't know what the deal is with him today.
Yeah,
he's just nervous.
He needs some love. It's Friday the 13th.
Okay, what's your favorite?
Mine is a surprise to you guys. It's the Hex. It's the Anycopter Hex with the gimbal. Right now I have the RC Manchow gimbal on it. Like I said, I've been keeping that thing in my back seat. I mean, every time I see something interesting or I want to check out from the air, I just pull over, fly. It is awesome. I have a tilt control and a gimbal. So when I'm flying, it's steady, fluid, and level, and I can look straight down. I can look up. I can look around with my yaw, and it just flies so nice. So that's by far my favorite.
Both you and David both fly. David, you with the Tricopter, you with the Hex. It's so funny when I see them flying it. It's truly an extension of their body. It's because Chad has an amazing mind with cinema and what he wants to capture. And David, you too. And they just set out and they capture it. And Chad, yours is with that stabilized platform. And then David, I noticed it's yours with the way
His is just naturally stable.
Yeah. Well, in the way he engages with airplanes that he's filming and things like that. It just truly blows my mind, you know, what these guys do. So everyone's going to have a different platform that they love, and it's going to meet their needs.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. That was the main segment, and they're almost coming up in an hour.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, real quickly, let's just run through what's new at FT.
Okay. So, right. Yeah.
That's short for flight test.
Okay, yes, so that's Josh, do you want to kick it off?
Well, we are playing crazy, and I'm gonna give a big
say playing crazy.
No, we're going crazy, but in a wonderful way, and it's because of you, amazing people. We did that Share the Hobby November special.
Oh wow!
And we thought, oh, this will spur on sales, but also be great. You guys took what we were asking you to do seriously with getting other people in the hobby, and the stories and the emails we got from that.
Oh my gosh!
Just blew our mind. And guys, thank you so much because just buying the product is wonderful. But then when you guys emailed us. Our email traffic probably doubled during that time.
We are getting mad amount of email, and I have to apologize. I know there's a lot of people that we haven't been able to get back to timely or even get back to as thoroughly as we want to. So
we value the stories, but the fact that you not only make a purchase to support flight test, but on top of that you share the story what you're going to do with it. It's fuel. Mm-hmm. It just honestly is just so touching in so many ways. So thank you for that. But we are playing crazy catch up with that. And we're finally we're getting caught up, which is wonderful. The releases were fun, and I gotta say, looking forward, I don't even want to say what it is because it's just so epic. But next year, the releases coming out next year are going to be amazing, and the Swede here has something in store that's just gonna it blows
my
mind.
People already know. There's a lot of chatter.
Well, I'm gonna let him
it.
Talk about it.
Yeah, it's in the back of a couple of videos now. Mm-hmm.
You can kind of see it,
and especially in the beginner series, mm-hmm. the latest one about transmitters, it's in the background, so you can see it. It's the full-blown design, and yes.
But we're not going to say too much about it.
Yeah. Not too much. I can say that I spent the last 3 days, I've stayed up until midnight, so I've designed stuff all day long as soon as I get in at 9 o'clock, and then I sit and just I've done graphics for it.
Yeah,
that's just the graphics portion of it.
Yeah, yeah. So the last 3 days I've spent maybe 16 hours a day, feels like, just designing the graphics for it. It's going to be good,
David. Good job. It's going to be amazing, and it's going beyond just another great product. You clearly have amazing passion behind it, and it shows in the workmanship, the flight characteristics, and also what you're doing with the graphics. And speaking of graphics, so one thing we're working towards is finding ways to give a nicer look. Not everyone wants to be a painter or a decal artist, so that will hopefully be a new chapter coming into 2014. Chad and I are working on a prop and slot. Can I just throw this out?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Chad and I are working on a prop and slot F-22. Mm-hmm. Everyone manufactures those, but we covered it, and we kind of were reminiscent. And Chad did an amazing design back when we were just starting to do kits, and it got kind of kept pushing back. But being that a lot of people are flying indoors and it's just a great backyard flyer, we're going to be bringing that out in January. And it's not going to look like the typical prop and slot. It's going to have some really nice build features and great flight performance.
It flies so good.
It's fun.
It is. And it's so funny because it looks exactly like something that should not be a beginner, but it is such like a beginner plane. Yeah.
Yeah, so the high alpha is amazing on
it. I think it could be our new, even first plane to get into, because you got the mid thrust.
It's a true bank and yank airplane, great stall tendencies, and all the F-22 designs all fly amazing. I mean, you have to fly a prop and slot F-22 design where it doesn't fly good. Right. Yeah, we put a lot of effort in trying to give more scale lines to it, and also make the build. It'll still build so quickly, and for scratch builders, and it'll be the first kit that we manufactured that's using the Element firewall. Not a power pod. It's not a swappable.
Oh, that's true.
So, that's why we brought out the simple firewall with the Versa. This is going to kind of be another line where not every plane has to have a swappable pod.
Right. Love it. Yeah. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Another thing is I'm going back to Sweden for 3 weeks tomorrow when this episode comes out.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, what? Tomorrow? Oh.
Yeah. I got a pit in my stomach just now.
It's Friday today, and it's coming up Monday. So okay. I'm leaving Tuesday.
Oh, wow. It is coming up fast.
Yes. So
I'm happy for you, brother, though. You need to spend some time with your bride.
Yeah. But rest assured, we have episodes shot for the time when I'm gone.
Oh, yeah. Christmas and New Year's Day are Wednesdays.
Yes.
And we are not releasing episodes those days because we love our families.
Yes. We don't want anyone here uploading an episode on Christmas Day.
Yeah. And people, I know what people are thinking. Well, just get it ready and then all you have to do is, make it live. It's not that simple. Release days get a little hectic and it is a lot of work because there's a lot of stuff to update and get out there. Yeah. So we're not going to make anybody work on Christmas or New Year's Day.
Nor do we really want people taking time away from the family to watch a flight test video.
Yeah. Because we know.
Unless you're watching it as a family.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so yeah, we work so much now with the
beginner series,
yeah,
and stuff, the designs,
yeah, and everything. So it's gonna be a good start of the year next year.
I think so. Yeah, we're gonna come on strong.
Yeah, a lot of amazing things.
We'll do an event.
Let's put a teaser out for that.
Okay.
I'm looking to maybe sometime in February to locking in
an indoor event.
And it's not going to be like a full-blown like Horizon style. This is basically we want to do meet and greets, what do we call them, open houses.
Yeah.
But you can't fly in the winter out here. It's cold. No. It's bitter. So finding an indoor venue where we can fellowship, make memories, have fun, but also bring out some planes, mainly the one that David is working and putting his heart and soul in before it gets released.
It would be good to get hands-on from our community.
Yes.
That, you know, from the flight test community, people that, you know, get our style, get what we're about, and want to get their hands on some stuff before it's released. I think that would be an awesome opportunity.
We love playing past the transmitter. It is so much fun. And what better way to have fun with people than to get to shake their hand, talk with them, but then also pass them the transmitter, let them fly something that's not even available in the store out in video yet. So is just kicking off. I'm working on that right now.
Yeah, we'll do it if people are interested in coming to something like that. It would be in Akron, and it's not a big deal. We're not going to have like tons of tables or anything.
No.
It'll just be us flying, bring lots of planes.
And it's going to be a venue you can come to and that you can fly and we can have fun with and nothing more. The polish is
everybody has to bring a covered dish.
Yes.
Covered?
No, or actually just make a couple extra props.
Can we please nickname it Flight Fest?
Yes.
I think we should call it, do a Flight Fest winter and then a Flight Fest summer.
Oh, you know what? We
indoor
should.
And outdoor.
I mentioned this the other day. You guys should knock on Flying Monkey's door. He is our forum moderator.
He's awesome.
We haven't even talked to him about this, but wouldn't it be cool if we brought Fred up?
Yeah.
I'd love that.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
So,
hey, Fred, do you want to come?
You know what? We should see if he listens to the podcast.
Yeah.
if you know Fred, don't tell him.
Don't tell him that we said this on the podcast. Yeah. Knock on his door on the forum and you know, see what his thoughts are and let him think it's his idea.
But
plant the seed, inception.
The last open house, it blew my mind. We had 1 week. We let you guys know 1 week in advance, and we were blessed with over 100 people that came through the doors. And
I couldn't believe.
From what, Canada, New Jersey, Buffalo, New York.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like 100 people in the immediate local area. Guys, that touches us, and it means a lot. But we want to make sure if you're going to take that effort, time, and money to come down, that you have an opportunity to fly and have fun. And during the winter at this venue here at our shop, it's not going to be very much fun. We want to have a place for you to have fun.
Plus,
it's
just the sheer volume of people, it would be really impractical.
You know what? We could do a Kickstarter that it wouldn't be so much to make sure that it's happening, but it's a way to track the interest, and it's a way – I wonder.
It would be interesting. Yeah.
You know, we could say the flight test indoor flight fest, and it could be a Kickstarter with a low amount to accomplish. But the buy-in is kind of like the ticket to help cover the venue costs.
That way we can know exactly who's coming.
Exactly.
And prepare.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, you know what? We look forward to give us feedback on also if anyone has experience and tips as far as what they'd like to see there. One thing I'm thinking is kill the flight test crew as a game.
Yep.
I've been harping about that. Yeah, we put up a plane and you guys get to try to kill our planes, and the person takes down, you know, say David's plane or Chad's plane or my plane.
Yes, so it's not kill the flight test crew.
No, it's kill their planes.
Kill their airplanes.
Yeah,
big difference.
Exactly.
Yeah. It sounds less dangerous.
Less fun.
But the person that takes down the plane, guess what? They get a free swappable or a t-shirt or something.
That would be awesome.
I think it'd be a fun game.
And we should get some nanos and do some air racing and tag stuff.
Tag is fun.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, you know, we're going to talk about this rest of time. But
yeah, yes. Okay.
All right,
so
moving on.
Yeah, next segment.
How are we doing on time, David? Do you think we should do what's new in RC Tech?
We're at like 3 hours.
About 3 hours in.
Yeah. No, we're 1:08. So
well, there was nonsense at the beginning too.
Probably an hour. So yeah, what's new in RC Tech?
Let's do it. What's new, guys?
I had stuff lined up for this, but I forgot my notes.
We're not quite there yet, but the robotics field is blowing up right now.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited the new year. I want to start incorporating more robotics projects and Arduino projects into our flight platforms.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm really excited about that. I even bought a couple Arduino Nanos, and I want to learn to play with them. Wayne has programmed his own lights. He bought some LED lights. Wayne has been with us since the start. He's my cousin, Josh Scott, and my cousin. And he has been helping out since the beginning and has volunteered his time many, many, many shoots. Yeah, Austin?
Speaking of Wayne, that reminded me of Chris Roncaglione's idea we should have been talking about and what's new.
We'll come back to that.
Good idea.
But because I want to make sure we give that proper
That's fine.
Space. But anyhow, so what I'm excited about in RC Tech is merging the robotics. Like, I want to start having some additional automation and things. And there's so many things you can do. It's just ridiculous. But anyhow, one of the things that got me interested was Wayne started programming his own lights to do color patterns and tracing and stuff
awesome.
Like that.
Amazing. So I have something. Paul from Ready to Fly Quads.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that
sent a ton of stuff. And
we have never in flight test history had somebody send so many free items.
Yeah. It's crazy. We're definitely
there's two workbench fulls.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
It was crazy. So he sent two Ready to Fly Quads and tons of flight controllers and stuff because I was talking to him on a crash cast. And in the after show, we were talking back and forth, and I said, I used to fly multi-wee because most of his stuff is multi-wee on his store. And I said, back in the day, it was like 3-4 years ago. And I'm like, it wasn't good. No, but it's completely different now. And I have a store called Ready to Fly Quads, and I have boards ready, and they're $15.
Wow. And that's accelerometers, gyros. It's not like a simple KK board.
No, it's good quality sensors and good quality stuff, and they're already set up. They're flashed with everything, so you don't even have to do anything.
And I don't know Paul. I have not met him or talked to him, but he is my new favorite best friend. Well, Paul, thank you so much for what you're doing. I can't wait to talk and meet to you.
So as soon as I get back from Sweden, I'm going to put those things in the air and then put one on my tricopter, and I'm going to have a blast.
Well, and it truly speaks very loudly of the confidence he has because he literally no strings attached. Hey, I just want you guys to have fun with this.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of times people send us stuff and it's got a lot of strings attached. Oh, that you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do that. And
send it back to us when you're done.
Yeah, he just sent us so much stuff just to see what we would do with it. Yeah,
it's really I can't believe his prices either on his site. If you go there,
either.
Like speed control,
he must be independently wealthy or something. Yeah. Because
he deserves another plug. What's his website again?
Ready to Fly Quads.
ReadyToFlyQuads.com.
Yeah, it's gonna be in the show notes, and also you can check it out. Just search Google.
But he truly has a passion for growing the hobby. I mean, that was the whole purpose why he did that. He just wants to.
I asked the question like a half dozen times. I'm like, David, why? Yeah. Why is he doing this?
So I called him and I talked to him, and he's so passionate about the community and getting people into the hobby, and he helps out so many people. So
thank you, Paul.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's awesome. So next segment.
Next segment is, well, we wanted to talk real quick about a podcast, something or other, and then we're going to move into our lightning round audio Q&A.
So I was talking about Wayne earlier.
Yes.
Who is my cousin.
Yes. And a friend of the show, Chris Ron Caglione, he's been on the podcast before, had kind of an interesting idea we wanted to throw out to the flight test community to see what they thought about it. As you guys know, the podcast right now is every other week just because practically that's just what we can do right now and forward with time. So Chris had the idea. He loves podcasts. He loves podcasting. And like I mentioned, he's been on the show.
He loves RC.
He loves RC, very importantly. He is thinking about possibly doing like a I don't know how it's evolved because Chad's had the latest conversation with him, but possibly like an FT chatter
segment. Yeah, something like that.
Basically to fill in the every other week that we don't do the podcast, where basically he will bring in people like Wayne, bring in maybe Alex Zavada, who's our product specialist here, and possibly even some people at this table.
Where we would kind of be guests at our own
show. On a rotational basis, you know, us pop in.
I think what the purpose is to give a little bit behind the scenes shoots and things like that.
Well, I asked him a little bit what he thought the format would be, and I loved his response. He said, I was thinking about not having a format. And just literally chit-chatting about RC, chit-chatting about flight tests, chit-chatting about just stuff in the industry. And I thought that was genius.
Yeah, and I think if you like just I guess kind of – he wants a very hangout feel, which I guess we kind of do that, but we always have –
try to focus a little bit.
Right, where I think they could have a lot of fun with it, and I really want to encourage and empower them. And a little bit of Chris's background, he came out during the Nightfly episode was when we first met him in 2010, and he has – like Wayne, they both have come out to volunteer their time as much as humanly possible, and that was it. Like neither of them wanted anything out of it. They just wanted to come out, help, be part of the team, and they have helped so much. Chris even would come out this summer and mow the grass. Like, I mean, it's just amazing. You know, they have helped out so much. And when he brought this up, I'm like, I would love to do anything I can to help you, Chris, you know, make this happen. But I'd like to bring it up to the audience to see, you know, what would you like to hear from these guys? Because this is a perfect opportunity to double our podcast frequency. Now, it would consist of Wayne, Chris, and Alex primarily.
Sure.
And then they would bring in guests as needed or whatever. But it would be their show. It would be, what, like Flight Test Chatter or something?
Yeah,
like
to do what they please with. I think that'd be really cool.
And the topic wouldn't be so much flight test. It would be RC.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. But, you know, they just have the unique perspective of spending a lot of time around flight tests. So anyway, if you guys can go to the show notes and let us know what you think about that or give your feedback or ideas to help Chris and to help us kind of think it through and figure it out, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. David, what were you going to say?
I lost it. No, oh. So they can talk more freely about things.
Than we can?
Yeah.
That makes sense, yeah.
I don't know. I think we're pretty uncorked.
Little bit. I can say more stuff.
Yeah.
We hold back a little bit.
We let David hold back a little bit.
Yes, we do.
Well, that's cool. I wanted to clear the air on that before we got into the questions. I also wanted to mention, just wanted to thank everyone. We have 181 ratings in iTunes.
Oh, my gosh.
And I just want to let you guys know that those reviews and ratings are really important to us. We read every single one. Those are really neat to see your guys' feedback. And I see a lot of them are honest. I mean, not all of them are 5 stars. There's a lot of Yeah, I know. What? How dare they? How dare they be honest? It's great. And I love reading those. So please keep those coming. Anyway, let's get into some Q&A. Lightning. All right, Nathan.
We do need that guy to actually give a good segue to the lightning round.
Oh, lightning round. Lightning round. That would be cool. Yeah, we should do that. All right, Nathan from California.
Hi, guys. This is Nathan in Sacramento, California. And I was wondering if you might have a recommendation for any type of RC aircraft that might be suitable for airline travel. I'm an airline pilot, and my job doesn't scratch the flying itch quite as well as I'd like. And I just think it would be really nice to have something that I could fit in my carry-on luggage, something that's either small enough or maybe collapsible that I could fit in my bag and fly when I'm away from home. Helicopter, multi-rotor, fixed wing, it doesn't really matter what kind. It would just be nice to have something instead of nothing to fly. Thanks in advance.
Nano QX.
Oh, I'm going to steal David's, his tricopter.
Well, fine. You guys both hit the two multi-rotors. Actually, you know what? Do you guys remember the Kinetic 800? It was a copy of the Multiplex. Yes. Is it Merlin?
Merlin, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. It's
Lightning.
Fast.
Okay, Kinetic 800, fixed wing. It collapses. Even the tail collapses.
Nice. Versa wing, you can make that collapsible if you put a Velcro strap on the top.
Was it supposed to be FPV?
Doesn't have to be.
No.
It doesn't have to be.
Okay.
So, but that actually folds in a really nice carry-on.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
If you want a plane. That's really cool. Just... Yeah.
Okay, next.
Tom from New Zealand.
My name's Tom, and I'm from New Zealand. I'm also the person you referred to in your last podcast as unknown 12 or 13. I can't remember now. But anyway, I've got several questions today. My first one is, when will you be coming out, or are you going to be coming out with a series on Flight Test about scale flying, so flying actual aeroplanes? My second question is there an expert FPV episode coming out soon? And my third question is, well, what do you think about the Global RC Model Flying Club Bruce Simpson from RC Model Reviews is proposing? Okay, thanks for listening to my questions. Cheers. Bye.
Oh, wow. So there's 3 questions there.
Yes.
Let's recap.
What was the first?
First one was...
Expert FPV?
Oh, no. Scale flying. Scale flying. Yes. I'll take
Wait,
that
what was the second one?
Just so expert FPV episode.
Okay. And then Bruce's global...
Yeah.
Okay.
Flying. Okay. As far as scale flying, that was my passion when I was young in high school and college.
You have some planes, right?
I still have some planes, and my wife still wants me to get back into what she called manly planes because they had big gas engines in them. I think this summer will be definitely a good time to...
Wait, was he talking about full scale?
No, yeah. I think...
Or scale
flying. Flying scale.
No,
I thought he said full scale.
Full scale?
Yeah.
Matter of fact, yeah, I'm slated to hopefully have my private. I'm a third owner in my dad's Taylorcraft BC-12D, and I'm also building a full-scale two-seat Pete and Polaire camper 1933 edition.
Yeah. And I think we should do a series on that. That
would be fun.
Can you give us a picture of that for the notes?
Probably. It's not too impressive right now, but
it looks pretty good.
I think it would be really cool.
Tail surfaces are all done. Bulkheads are cut. And David, you and I, this spring, we may actually make a primary glider to have some fun with behind the rover, huh?
I can't.
Okay.
That's one of my huge projects I want to do.
Full scale. I thought he was talking about large scale. Like large planes.
I think he said full scale.
Oh, and yeah.
I would love to. It's going to depend on our audience, too. Yeah. Like, yeah. If our audience is like, no, we want stuff that we can build and do and, you know.
Well, one thing I'd love if the audience wanted it would be to put flight to the test beyond just RC models, parasoring, hang gliding, all those things to take the challenge to see if we can pull it off and learn it and do it in an economical, quick way. That's probably a little more TV-ish than
I would love that. I'm going back to Sweden.
That's a good reason to bring you back, brother.
Oh, man. Okay, so next question was, what was the second?
Expert FPV episode.
Yeah. Go, Chad.
Wait, I don't fully understand the question.
Are we going to do one?
We did.
Because we do beginners, yes, definitely. So
yes.
We're
definitely going to do an expert.
I think it's good to hold off and be a little slow because technology is constantly getting better and better.
And that's the problem. Because if we would have done it a year ago when people first asked, it would be outdated already. So it's tricky because the advanced stuff is happening so fast.
Yeah, and it's funny because the technology is changing. It's actually better to go simple sometimes. Now the receivers are so good. You don't need diversity and you have the circular polarized antennas, so diversity actually hinders you where the diversity controller can't do as
very
much
well
work.
Said.
Yeah, right. It doesn't work anymore. So it's actually going backwards.
Last question.
The third question was Bruce from RC Model Review is, I just only read the headline on this. He's trying to do an international flying club.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good idea.
There's one that exists. It's called Flight Test.
I watched the first half of the video.
No, I don't completely understand what he's doing. What is it?
I'm not well read up on it either, but it's going to be a flying club, and if I understand it right, it's more so you have power behind
you have a right to
making.
Fly.
Yeah, you have the right to fly, and you have more... You have more power when trying to make decisions in your country, like the rules make.
Okay.
Rule making.
It's the airfield in New Zealand, right? He's talking about.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out, if it's tied to a geographical location or is it something
No, it's going to be global, I think.
That's what I thought.
Okay, we're confused. We shouldn't be talking about this.
We'll do a little research next time. Maybe we can talk about it.
Lightning!
Okay. It's from Austin.
Sorry,
I cut you off.
This question's from Austin. Same name as me. I just wanted to say that.
Okay. Is he in Austin?
I don't know.
That would be awesome.
Austin from somewhere. Here we go.
What do you think about the PowerUp 3.0 paper airplane kit? Do you think an Elevon setup would be possible with two of the PowerUp systems?
Is that the Kickstarter project he's talking about?
Yeah, he is talking
about that. Little thrust vectoring thing, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it's cool.
Yeah, I don't know. What do I think about what do we think about Elevons? I think it would be great. I think if they get that going, there's so much you can do with it.
Yeah.
Beyond that,
it would be cool. Yes, try it.
We'd love it.
Shoot us a video.
Try it. Make an article on flighttest.com.
There you go. All right, Ben from Delaware.
Hey, Flight Test. This is Ben from Delaware. I was just wondering, as you continue to expand your line of swappables, are you going to be sticking with the pretty simple foam board, popsicle stick, barbecue skewer construction, or are you going to start incorporating other common elements as well? I know you want to keep things as simple as possible, which I really appreciate, and I'm sure other folks do as well. But I was wondering what the vision is for further development of your swappable series. Thanks.
Go, Josh.
Great question.
Rephrase the question.
Yeah, rephrase the question is, as we grow more and more with the swappable designs, are we going to introduce any other elements, or have we kind of peaked out with our elements? Answer is no. If there's something that we have a need for and there's a common element that we'll provide for it, like I never thought we'd be using coffee stirrers for wheel bushings or pushrod guides, things like that. So if there's a need for that, my goal is to just only build on the building techniques and also build on the materials used to get more versatility and be able to achieve more. So absolutely.
If it's needed, we introduce it.
Yeah, and also a huge value. I'm really inspired. The articles of people that their own swappable designs that they made. That one gentleman made that amazing mashup and he did the article on it. They're incredible, and their ideas are very inspirational to me and to other people. So guys, if you have your own technique or an own material, please build it, make an article about it, because you're helping the whole community, and I'm happy that the whole swappable concept is doing what it's doing, and the building techniques are.
Good answer.
Yep.
That was the quickest one ever.
That was awesome. Yes. All right, next one's from Phil.
Hey guys, my name is Philip Moore. I just wanted to thank you for the awesome content that you guys provide and willingness to answer any questions that I may have here. I'm getting back into the hobby, been into it about a year after having a 15-year hiatus. I really relate to Josh, and what he talks about is the relationships with your father growing up in the hobby. I had those memories, and now I have two daughters of my own and looking to create those memories again with them. In fact, I just got back from the holidays where I took my tricopter. It's a blend of Chad's Anycopter and David's design, and rekindled that passion in my father as well as my brother while we were at the holidays flying the tricopter around. So really, really love what you guys are doing and the direction that you're taking this hobby. Really appreciate that. The question that I have for you guys revolves around FPV. I really want to start getting into the FPV factor, and the technology seems to be updating and changing daily. Just wanted to know with what you guys have experienced, and you seem to have tried many different configurations, different cameras, using the GoPro, using security cameras, as well as different frequencies, what the best setup that you would feel for someone starting out to have success would be. I'd really like the goggle thing, but I've never tried on any goggles, don't know where to go with that. So I look to fly low and around and through and between the trees and around buildings and just have a lot of fun with that, and would like to take my daughters on a ride when we get that done. So any suggestions that you have and can provide as far as FPV, really appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work.
I think hey, Flintus crew, my name is Paulo from Brazil.
Oh, no. Stop. I think to answer that question, well, we covered a lot of that already. I think that slipped through the FPV segment.
Yeah, I missed that one.
Austin.
I can't believe I did it.
No, but he had a question we didn't really answer. What if I'm flying around things? And what I was trying to say was maybe 900 megahertz.
900, 1.2, depending on what's legal in your country. And check out, sir, do your research. But, 900 and 1.2 penetrates much better.
Yeah, and Phil, thank you for sharing your heart. And it is a real blessing for a father to engage their daughters and make memories. So, and sharing your story with your father. This is what one of the greatest things about this hobby has to offer, is to be able to connect in unique ways and make memories. So thank you for sharing your story, your heart. You made me a little emotional.
Check out the ready-made RC kit.
Yeah.
Ta-da. All right, so next.
Paulo from Brazil, which already played a little bit.
Hey, Flight Test crew, my name is Paulo from Brazil, and I've recently been trying to make lots of scratch builds with Depron, because we don't really have Dollar Tree foam board here in Brazil, and I haven't succeeded, because it's really hard. I'd like to know if you guys can make any videos with Depron scratch building tricks. Thanks.
I guess we haven't had that question much, have we?
Yeah, and generally he nailed it. One of the biggest struggles with Depron is the fact that you need carbon fiber or some kind of other media to reinforce it. Because virtually foam board is kind of like Depron sandwiched between two layers of paper.
Depron, the real Depron is stiffer than the model airplane foam.
It? Yeah, it's a little bit heavier too, right?
It's heavier as well, but it's much stiffer and it snaps in a different way.
I see.
It doesn't bend as nicely, it snaps.
One of the ways to reinforce Depron is you can layer it with packaging tape or some kind of other media.
That's if you layer it with something like tape or something, then you can use it exactly as we do, because you can score all the way through and bend stuff.
And what was there was a technique where you could take newspaper and soak it in something. What was it?
If you take white glue.
Oh, that's right. Like Elmer's glue.
Yeah. White glue, some wood glue or something, and you add some water, usually 50-50-ish. And then if you take newspaper, because all you need is long fibers, and newspapers are very long, nice fibers, and you put that on, or brown paper. It's fantastic. It makes the model super strong.
Yeah, I haven't tried that. I want to try that. Yeah, I might do it today.
I think it's borderline pretty much your fiberglass and you're playing with
it
paper.
It is the cheap man's way of fiberglassing stuff. And it's so strong. I flew with my friend and he flew a quickie and it was doing 150 miles an hour. And we pulled vertical.
Like 8 Gs?
No, I was thinking like 30 or 40, and oh. The wing doesn't bend. There's no carbon fiber in it. It's just brown bagged white foam.
Yeah. And also, I'd love to see opportunities, and maybe in the year 2014, we can explore opportunities to bring the Dollar Tree foam board to other countries, whether it's through distribution, networking, talking to the manufacturer, saying, hey, let's look at that, because there's a real value to that simple material.
I love it.
I
hated it when I started out. I
remember the stories between you and Chad. It was the funniest thing.
Yeah, I'm like, because I read so much on the forums, like, it's heavy and it's not strong and it's terrible, more or less, was the forums post you read. And when I got here and flew the first plane, I'm like, what? Great.
Yeah, and Josh was even cutting stuff out and making it. And I wasn't on board right away. I just told Josh, if you believe in it, do it and we'll see what people like. And now there's tons of planes, and I can't believe how many people around the world are building them out of this foam that everybody considered junk pretty much.
Yeah.
It does have drawbacks too, but as you get more and more advanced in the designs, once you bend it over to an airfoil, it's not warping.
Yeah, it's not warping, and the paper makes it so strong, and it's still light.
The Kraken.
It really is. You can lift a 2.5-kilo Kraken by the wingtip. It doesn't do anything. There's nothing inside of it. It's just foam.
Foam and paper.
Foam and paper.
We should have bought stock in that company before we did this.
I think,
episode.
You know, here's what I want to do. I want to talk to the manufacturer, and I want to see if we can spec out a paper that's like sprayed or has
A coating.
A coating on it, or like what's that called? Stain guard, the stuff where water beads off of it.
Oh, Camp Dry or whatever?
Yeah,
or
Camp Dry, Scotch Guard.
Scotch Guard.
Something like Scotch Guard where the water won't attack it, and we could spec out our own foam board and then manufacture it and send it.
That would be nice.
Sweet. It's the future.
All right.
Okay, next question.
Ian from Hawaii.
Hey, Flight Test. My name is Ian. I'm from Maui, and I wanted to give you a little challenge. Fly an aquarium with some kind of fish in it. I just wanted to see if you guys could do that. I thought it would be a really cool challenge to do. Thanks.
Wants to know.
Sorry.
Oh, I was, so Ian wants to know if we could fly a what was it?
It was a small aquarium with a fish in it.
Oh, I totally didn't hear that. I thought he said a fish net.
No.
Like to catch a fish.
So make an aquarium fly.
Right.
I think we could make a beta fish in one of those cute little gloves.
Actually, I have no doubt that we could do it.
Animal rights
it's
people may get
should
one.
We do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right. It's should we do it is the question. I like his creativity, though.
I can see that no fish were hurt in this publication.
Yeah. Ian, it's a great idea, but probably not the best
we'd get in trouble
thing to do.
Well, also I want to point out that's a great voicemail format to give a suggestion for a show.
We don't want to do anything that's going to harm living things.
Gliders usually use water as ballast. We just put a fish in and it's done.
So send us more suggestions, Ian. That was great. Okay, this next one's from Finley from somewhere.
Wait, does the fish have to be alive?
After or before?
You know, the sad thing is we're joking about putting squirrels in planes all the time. So
right.
We kind of miss
fish is the line.
Fish is the line. We put a turkey in a plane.
But we hate our squirrels.
We put a turkey in the plane, but the fish is, that's off limits.
Yeah, legs and arms.
Okay. All right, here we go.
Hi. My name is Finn. I am 14 years old. And my question is, well, what's the best plane for durability or crashing? Now, I'm not the worst pilot in the world. I think I'm pretty decent, actually. But I do, stupid things. the other day I was flying at night because I couldn't wait till morning. It was a maiden, actually. And I live on a farm, and we have this big pole with, big lights on it. So I turned those on and started flying and trimming it out and stuff. But I flew too high for the lights to reach. So I could hear the model but not see it, and it just kept on going further and further away. And and so eventually I just cut the throttle. And I guess it was trimmed pretty badly, because about 2 seconds later, I saw a streak of white and just it slammed into the ground, like nose first. It was really hard. It was probably my worst crash ever, by far. And, so that's an example of a crash, and there was not much left of the plane. So, in your opinion, what's the best plane for durability if I was going to crash it? Thanks.
Finn, that was a really great question. And what's funny is you sound exactly like us.
Yeah. What's a plane that's magic and indestructible?
Yeah.
I think the very.
But his experience, that I loved listening to the story. That sounded like you could have just replaced him with any of us.
That was us at Walmart.
Exactly. Three years ago.
Yeah, 3 years ago, flying, and all of a sudden you can only hear the motor of the ducted fan.
Right. We don't want to recommend that Finn goes and flies at Walmart. But,
yeah, don't do that.
I would recommend an EPP wing and then coat the whole. Leading edge in like shoe goo or something, plumber's glue or something, not the Elmer's, but.
Maybe scratch build, do the Versa, and then shove some lights inside of it. That way you can fly at nighttime and you don't have to worry about losing sight of it.
And it gets a little chipped up and janky and stuff like that, but it still flies awesome.
Versa's
like,
really durable.
Yeah, as long as you don't care how it looks, it will fly.
We took one in straight in from about 200-300 feet up. And we still flew it out. We thought it was going to be the end of it. No, it still flew.
Well, the episode we just did, you hit the tower. You went down. It was in the woods. I ran over. I picked it up. It was missing a winglet. It had chunks out of it. Mm-hmm. Half the prop was missing. Well,
half of one prop.
Half of one prop. Side of the prop was almost missing, kind of missing.
Yeah.
And I waved it in the air. Josh throttled it up and flew it home.
Yeah. And it sounded amazing.
Quill having a radio on a wing. I think any wing probably. And if you're going to be tempted to fly at nighttime, put some LEDs or lights in it.
Yeah, keep it as light as possible. Yeah. The less mass you have when you hit, the less it's going to break.
Yep. And correct me if I'm wrong, packing tape on the leading edge, that's typically a good idea. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, next one is from AJ in Kansas City.
All right, AJ.
Hey guys, I'm AJ. I am from Kansas City, Missouri, and I was wondering when the flight test travel schedule for different events this year is going to come out so I can plan on seeing you guys. I was also wondering when you guys are going to do a snow or ski planes episode so I can build my flight test skis and fly in some snow now that we're having some. Love the show. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, Flight Test. My name's Chris.
We need to stop.
We need to get the man shocker out again.
Yeah.
So, AJ, thank you for your question. It was
2014 travel schedule, and it was also ski or snow flying episodes.
Right.
Yeah, start from the back.
Okay. 2014 flying schedule. We'll let you know 1 week before we go.
What's funny is schedule.
That's the funny word.
I don't even know how to spell that word. But the one thing I can almost guarantee, Joel Knoll definitely, Horizon definitely, Horizon Indoor definitely. I'm hoping to do Ceph.
I was going to say, we haven't talked about it. David asked the other day.
Yeah, I asked because it's the last event I can go to.
Ceph?
Yeah.
Perfect. I mean, I think we should plan
We need to do Ceph then.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
See, you guys just heard our schedule.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Perhaps Jonah E-Week.
Yeah, Jonah, we're not going to do Neat. That's done.
Oh, really? Wow, you guys loved it
last
year. I know,
man. The people were great. The officials were not as great as the people.
We heard a lot of good things about Jonah E-Week, though.
Yeah, Enol. And it's funny, we're at Neat, and even at Neat, people were talking how great Enol is. So we're going to go ahead and try Enol this year. I think that's pretty certain. So,
okay.
Ceph, Horizon Indoor, Null, Enol.
We'll try as many as possible.
That's not a promise. Yeah, none of those.
The funny thing is, usually what happens is, hey, are we going to that event?
Yeah, we should go to that event.
Yeah, we should. We should really get an RV.
Get an RV. Yeah.
When is it? Oh, next week. Okay.
Yeah, I'll get an RV.
That's usually how it works.
Yeah, that's not just a joke. That's happened. Well, every time so far we've gotten an RV. That's how it's been.
It's like the day before, we did not know if we had an RV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, NephBrothersRV.com.
It was funny, like months in advance, like Sean from High Tech was like, hey, you guys going to this event? We're like, we have no idea.
What event? Oh, yeah, sure.
Wait, what is it again?
Yeah. The latter question was really good with the snow episode. A matter of fact, I have some pontoons built that will double as either pontoons or skis that are made out of Dollar Tree foam board.
And what are you going to call them?
Huh?
What's the name of it?
Oh, the Yeti? or what?
No, I thought it was going to be the wheel panskis.
Oh, the wheel. Yes.
The wheel panskis.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that. Wheel panskis. Making me giggle on the inside again. Yeah, because the way we had it, we were fit with the speedster and the fogey, yeah, and the wheel pants were on it, and the wheel pants is kind of cupped right over that, and it looked like wheel panskis.
That's funny. That's
also, hilarious. Can we please fly Teddy Coughlin's
glider?
Skis. Yeah, no, he sent us skis.
Yeah, once we get some good packing snow, it's on the cub ready to go.
Good. Teddy sent a few things. I forget how
beautiful
old he
glider.
Is. 12, 13 now maybe. And he sent us some wonderful gifts that we haven't had a chance to feature on the show, but we cannot wait to do
it,
that.
It's funny because it shows how much we love them, because generally we just are so eager to put them in the air. This one's we wanted to practice discretion, especially with that glider he made, because right, we don't want to hurt it. We want to keep that thing around.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, he put a lot of heart into it. And so thank you, Teddy.
All right. Next is Chris from Maryland.
My name's Chris. I work at NASA at the Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. And I think you guys are the ones who are really awesome.
That's funny.
I like the theme song.
Yeah, there's a theme in the background. So was there a question?
I don't think so.
Thank you for working at NASA, making young minds curious and inspired. Thank you very much.
Yes, and let's work on getting to the moon of Jupiter here soon explore the – have you heard of the water?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that would be cool.
I'm out of the loop on that one.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, brother.
Thanks, Chris. All right, Charles from Missouri. I think that's our last question.
Hey, Flight Test. This is Charles Blackwell, a.k.a. Foam Flying Fool from Fenton, Missouri. And I was wondering, will this podcast ever manifest into being live? Maybe even live with video? Or maybe just live with a live chat room where we could ask you questions during your lightning round or, you know, during the show? Or even have one show dedicated specifically to a live chat and answering questions.
Wow. That would be awesome.
Hey, Flight Tech.
Within his question, it evolved from a podcast to a Google Hangout.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
So I think we should do a Google Hangout and have people – we can have one person running around with a computer and get suggestions, and we can do it while we're testing out some stuff.
I want to do a mass man night, build night.
That would be awesome.
We always did that at my house. We would get five or six guys together, and we'd build till 2 or 3 in the morning. And then we'd, of course, do like our previous caller did, go out and made them at nighttime. But that would be fun to do like a Google Hangout atmosphere. We all are building like planes together.
Oh, that would be cool.
And chiming back and forth.
I think it'd be cool to like have a Google Hangout where people challenge us in real time, and we have to very quickly build or do something.
Answer in real time?
Cool. Yeah. Or, no, not answer. Do it.
I mean, yeah, execute the challenge.
That would be kind of cool. Or, yeah, that would be kind
of
cool.
Got a lot
of try out new planes. Which one would you want to see us fly now? It's like, oh, that plane. Okay, unpack, go out, fly it.
Oh, David crashed it. Next.
Next.
We're aware that there's – because I think we talked about in a previous podcast, we got a bunch of comments about a Google Hangout. We're aware that there's an overwhelming demand for that. We just haven't quite done it yet. Yeah, but
And thank you for making the demand for that. I never dreamed that would be even something talked about.
It does sound like fun, though.
Yeah.
So, this episode has been a lot of because we got so many voicemails, we wanted to play as many as possible.
Sure.
And I would have prepared better if I wasn't completely obsessed with my design that I'm working on.
And it shows how awesome we think it is, because I'd be pulling them away from that, being like, get on this. But we're also really excited too. So, David, good job on that.
Thank you.
But on another note, I mean, actually on the same note that David has said, I mean, you guys basically made this episode. So, I mean, we responded to the things that you guys submitted, but, I mean, really, the community made this episode. So,
thank you guys.
Yes, thank you. And we'd love to hear more voicemails. SpeakPipe, that's SpeakPipe.com/flighttest. You can leave us a voicemail there, and we'd love to play it on the show.
Yes, thank you guys. So we're wrapping up.
Yeah. One last thing. If you want to get an EDF already, get a 70 millimeter 10-bladed chainsaw fan, Just saying.
Why would they get that, David?
Just for the future, you know, February.
And you know, what if they wanted to buy a motor while they're ordering that?
I would say a 2,300 kV motor and a 4S3000 would be roughly within.
So a 4SL3000, and of course you need an ESC to power that motor.
Yeah, it would be kind of like 60 amps would be good. Something just in the ballpark.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be in the show notes too.
Wait,
right?
So what would they put this in?
Something. Just keep it around.
If you just had it laying around, it would be convenient. Maybe in January
or February.
After possible indoor flying.
Just saying.
You never know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's good to have suggestions.
All right. Hey, guys, thank you so much for listening and your input.
Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Yep, see you guys.
I hope you're still recording that.
I am. Okay, I'm going to stop now.